There are some things that are too good to keep a secret. Like how your Amex Platinum card helps you have the perfect trip. I'd like to check into the Centurion Lounge. Or how it seems like you always get those hard-to-snag tables.
Ooh, yum.
And how you get the most out of select can't-miss events. With access to the Centurion Lounge, Resi Priority Notify, and Amex card member benefits at select events, you'll have to share. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
This episode brought to you by 20th Century Studios' Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Director Wes Ball breathes new life into the epic franchise. As a ruthless king attempts to build his empire at the expense of the remaining human race, a young ape begins a journey to fight for a future for apes and humans alike. Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Enter the kingdom in IMAX this Friday and theaters everywhere. Get tickets now.
As you may have realized, I watch a lot of sports. That's why I like Prime Video. It has all my sports in one app, like the National Women's Soccer League, included with Prime. Plus, you can buy Premier Boxing or stream the NHL and NBA playoffs on Max with the Bleacher Report Sports add-on, or add Paramount Plus for the Masters on CBS. Prime Video. It's all your favorite sports in one place. Restrictions apply. Prime membership required for add-on subscriptions. See amazon.com/AmazonPrime for details.
You are listening to the Dan Patrick Show on Fox Sports Radio.
Poll question before we get to our good buddy Herm Edwards.
More to blame for the Bears' struggles: the quarterback, the coaches, the organization itself.
Well, that's a long-term and a short-term answer in there. Herm Edwards, former head coach, college in the NFL. He appears on the new football-themed show Monday Blitz at 3 Eastern on the Mothership, as well as SportsCenter and ESPN Radio as well. Good morning, Herm. Let me start there. Who's to blame for this mess in Chicago?
Oh, boy. You can kind of spread it around, I think, when you look at this football team play. You know, they're still in the mode of trying to rebuild obviously, the offensive line. Defensively, they've struggled the last couple of years. Have a quarterback that's unique in the sense that he's, you know, he's basically, I hate to say this in pro football now, we have RPO quarterbacks. And what you do with them, the style of offense you run with them, is very important. I think he made light of it in his press conference. I think he walked some things back. But basically, you know, this is what happens in pro football a lot. Coaches come in with systems, and their system is bigger than the player. Well, if you want to be a successful coach, you have to massage your system around the player's skill set.
Yeah, but it feels like we've seen coaches adapt to that, that they know, yes, I'm not going to ask you to be different. If I'm coaching Cam Newton, I got to let Cam Newton be Cam Newton, or Michael Vick, or Patrick Mahomes. And this situation's interesting because usually that third year, you see the quarterback start to make that, you know, progression. Like all of a sudden you go, okay, you're going to make that jump or are you not going to make that jump? But I'm wondering, how would you coach? How would you coach Justin Fields?
Well, obviously I'm going to allow him to use his legs. That's going to be part of the passing game. You know, they tried to do it a little bit last year. And I think what they were worried about, he ran so much. You know, he ran for over 1,100 yards. I mean, as a quarterback, I mean, that's, you know, those are numbers like you scratch your head at. I think our vision of him would be similar to Jalen Hurts, what he's been able to do as a quarterback. You know, still has the ability to run. He can throw the ball. He's more comfortable in the pocket now. And that's the case when you watch Justin Fields. I mean, last week you watched him, he's almost like a statue in the pocket. Decision-making, when to get the ball out. You know, he struggles with that. Sometimes quarterbacks, their timing, their rhythm, you got to get them going early in the game. And those are the things that I think going into this week you'll see from Chicago Bears.
Yeah, but now you got Kansas City.
Oh, boy.
You know, you can't beat Green Bay, you can't beat Tampa Bay, and now all of a sudden you got the Chiefs, who are fully assembled with Chris Jones and Travis Kelce. And is he just going to go, all right, I'm going back to the way I did last year. I'm just going to run and try to create something here and not stay in the pocket.
I think you'll see more of that this week. He'll leave, obviously, when he feels he can move the chains. And I think for quarterbacks like this, And you know this, Dan. You watch football a long time as well. You got to get them started, you know, early in this game. They've got to see some completions to get them confident. That's any quarterback. And I think how you design that is very important. His mechanisms, you know, generally you dial up a play and there's always a check down. His check down is his legs. Okay, if it's not open, you know what? Take off, man. Go ahead. And you know, that's what we did with Jaden Daniels. His freshman year when he played for us at Arizona State, you know, it was like the check down is your legs, man. You know, if it's not there, go ahead and go.
Well, you can do that in college. I think Justin Fields is trying to out-athlete defenses, and you can't do that. In college, you can do that. At Ohio State, you can do that. You can't do that. It's not sustainable there. I think that's what would concern me if I'm the Bears. You passed up on – you know, Bryce Young, you traded that number one pick. Here's your guy. And at some point, you're going to have to extend him or you have to move on from him.
This will be a big year for them, you know, this season, how he finishes and if he continues to develop, they'll be fine. If not, that's the question they're going to have to ask yourself.
Yeah. I was wondering if you're Caleb Williams and you're going, I could go to the Bears or I could go to the Cardinals.
Yeah, and you know, and these quarterbacks have to realize you get picked number one, you're probably going to go to a team, you know, that didn't win a lot of games. And that's, you can dodge it and say, well, I'm going to stay another year. A lot of these guys can because of the money they can get for the name, image, and likeness. They stay in college longer. That's maybe the good thing about college football. Guys can stay in a little longer if they choose to, right?
Or he could pull an Eli Manning and just say, look, I don't want to go to your organization.
Yeah, that'd be interesting.
We're talking to Herm Edwards, the former player, coach, college, and the NFL. How do you explain what Deion has done, and can it be replicated around the country?
There's only one Deion Sanders. There's no doubt about that. Deion's a good friend. I'm enjoying it like everyone else. He's brought national attention to his program, along with a team that is very exciting, right? He's got some really good players. It's a shame about the kid Hunter. I thought, you know, the way he was playing, if he continued at this pace, he's got to be talked about as a Heisman guy. You know, who does that? Who plays 160 plays in a football game? I mean, I haven't seen anything like that. I mean, he's a phenomenal athlete, but he's brought national attention, Deion. No matter if you're a Colorado Buffalo fan or not, you want to see these guys play. I mean, it's funny. And his son is a tremendous player now. I mean, boy, he can play quarterback now. And so it's something that's unique. I don't think you can replicate it because there's only one Deion Sanders. Now, what you can replicate is this. He understands the portal. He understands there's free agency in college football now, how you build your team. You're going to have to kind of go outside the walls. You know, there's free agency. You have the ability to bring players in.
Could you see Deion coaching in the NFL one day?
That would be interesting. I think his aspirations might be to do that later on. It would be very interesting.
But what's the biggest difference with that, Herm?
Well, you know, his persona, how he's going about getting these young guys excited and, you know, all the rah-rah that's in college football. Pro football, and Deion knows this. He was a great player, Hall of Famer. Maybe he's the best corner to ever play the game, in my opinion. How you handle that with NFL players. You know, you're going to have an old group of guys. You're going to have some young group of guys that can buy into what he's doing. Yeah. The old group of guys are just going, hey, look, man, I don't want to hear all that, right? So, but I think he's smart enough to know if he gets to that level, he'll handle it. He'll be able to handle it.
And I didn't think this would be their year. I thought it would be next year. And now they go to Oregon. They got USC.
Right.
How sustainable do you think this is for Deion?
Well, I think this. I think Oregon will be a really good game for them to see where they're at. SC, I believe this. I don't see SC's defense. I don't know if it's improved that much.
Yeah.
So you can score. And it could be a scoring game against SC, right? I mean, that's how you look at it. And SC, it makes no bones. I mean, with that quarterback, you could score as many as you want, right? And that offense they have, boy, it's fun to watch too. I mean, you won't be able to sit down. I mean, if you go like go get a snack, somebody might score a touchdown time you leave and come back, right? But this would be an interesting 2 weeks for him.
Where do you put Micah Parsons now? Great defenders.
Oh, boy.
Not just in the game now, but is he starting to slip into a different category? Yeah.
That's the talk. I won't say he has taken the throne away from 56 that played for the Giants. You know who that is. I was just with him about a month ago.
But you saw LT, a young LT.
Well, he was my era.
Yeah. Yeah.
We played against each other. And
how would you describe that?
Oh, he wrecked the game. But he physically could wreck the game, too. That's the difference I see. LT was – it's because he's bigger. He was a big man that could run and could just, you know, elude. But he was physical. I mean, he could physically dominate you. It was a scary physicalness with LT. And so Michael Parsons is unbelievable, though. I mean, his ability – 60% of the time – 60% of the time he beats one-on-one. The average in the National Football League is 17%. He's winning at a 60% rate. That's unheard of. I mean, the whole league is at 17. He's at 60. I don't know. I'd figure out how where number 11's at. I'd send two guys at him for sure.
Well, remember Joe Gibbs did that with LT. He'd make sure that you kept the tight end and you know, had Joe Jacoby there. Because if not, then, you know, you got trouble in the backfield.
No doubt. But the problem now in football, and you know it, college is really taking over in the NFL, too. You don't see two tight ends hardly anymore.
Yeah.
You know, you don't see two running backs. I mean, you see three wide receivers, four wide receivers, one tight end, three wide receivers, one back. I mean, that's what you see. They spread you out. Because if not, the receivers are getting mad, right? You got to deal with these receivers that want the ball every other play. They're 7-11. They're always open. That's what they tell you on the sideline. Hey, man, coach, I'm open, man. Okay, we'll get you the ball. We get it, right?
I was talking about Dan Marino yesterday. I think at the end of your career, you faced Marino.
No, I played against him, yes. Played against Dan.
I keep saying if I could play the position, I would want to play the way he played the position because he was ahead of his time. What he did, you know, five wide, empty backfield, and that's what you have in college, high school, and now some of the NFL teams.
Well, look, Mark Duper, Clayton.
Nat Moore.
They had them all. I had to cover them. I was trying to cover those guys. he's unbelievable at quarterback. Maybe one of the – he's in the top three quarterbacks to ever play, in my opinion. Way he got the ball out, his accuracy, his arm talent. I mean, it was just I remember when he came in the league, I said, who is it? Watch him in college, and all of a sudden you're playing against him. Then all of a sudden you got Duper, you got Clayton, you got Nat Moore. I mean, it's like, oh, boy, who are these guys, right? We had to play them. And we had a great defense in Philadelphia.
Yeah.
But they made us work. Jimmy Cephalo was in the slot too. Don't forget about Jimmy Cephalo.
Oh yeah, Penn State, Jimmy Cephalo. Yeah.
They had a good crew.
How you doing? You doing all right?
I'm good.
Yeah,
I'm good. Yeah, traveling on the weekends, obviously leaving, going back to the mothership as you mentioned.
Yeah,
and in there on Sundays, Mondays, and you know a little bit Tuesday to come home. So, but I'm good. My girls are growing up. I got one that's a senior now. Looking at colleges, she's a journalist major, so she's in a couple of spots. You know,
tell her to get into another field than that. You know,
it's too late. It's too late.
I was watching the video of when you walked off the field when you were told that you got fired. Like we're talking about those awkward, like Lane Kiffin getting fired tarmac there. I mean, what goes through your mind? And somebody is filming this when you're walking on.
Yeah, but
you have any idea that was happening?
Well, no. And that was more – that wasn't – that's not – that statement and people said that, you know, he talked about I got fired. No.
Okay.
No, that wasn't it at all. We always meet there. We always talk, AD and the president. And no, that it wasn't – that didn't happen like people make it to be.
Well, see, yeah. you can tell your daughter how the media takes stories, and then they
It's okay. I was part of the media. I get it.
But imagine if you're Lane Kiffin, where they don't let you get on the bus, Coach, and after a loss.
Yeah, that, and I'm happy for Lane. You know, Lane was with us in Tampa when he was a young kid. He was the ball boy when we were down in Tampa Bay. Monty was his father. Monty was the coordinator. I was assistant head coach. Lovey was the linebacker coach. Rod Marinelli was the D-line coach. We had a crew of really good coaches. And then when I left to go to New York, Tomlin took my spot. So Lane was on the sideline as a young kid growing up. I remember Lane when he was, you know, in high school. So
did you think at any point that guy would be a head coach?
You know, you wondered because when you just watching him grow up, you know, Nathaniel Hackett was the ball boy up in New York with me, with Paul, you know, Paul was, listen to this. Now, that's how far we go back. I mean, when I went to Cal as a freshman, Paul Hackett was the GA.
Grad assistant.
Yes, at Cal Berkeley. That's how far I go back with Paul. And then when I wanted to run the West Coast offense in New York, I hired Paul, you know, because he was with Walsh and all those guys and run my offense with Chad Pennington, right? And Nathaniel and my son were playing. They were like the ball boys. Boy, you stay in this league long enough, boy, you see it. You know?
And John Gruden was a ball boy at Notre Dame.
Yeah. Unbelievable how it works.
Good to talk to you. I guess that's the thing is you got to start out as a ball boy. That's how you become a head coach in the NFL.
And you know this, Dan. Just kind of hang around, and all of a sudden, you know, you just things happen, you know. And
Good to talk to you. Thank you, buddy.
Always, my friend. Thank you.
That's Herm Edwards. You can see him on the Mothership, new football-themed show, Monday Blitz, 3 Eastern on ESPN. Also appearances on Get Up and SportsCenter. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 until noon Eastern, 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. And you can find us on the iHeartRadio app at FSR or stream us live on the Peacock app. I saw this note, third and short.
This episode brought to you by 20th Century Studios' Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Director Wes Ball breathes new life into the epic franchise, set several generations after the last installment, in which apes are the dominant species. As a ruthless king attempts to build his empire at the expense of the remaining human race, a young ape will fight for the future of apes and humans alike and embark on a journey that will redefine the planet. Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Enter the kingdom in IMAX this Friday and in theaters everywhere. Get tickets now.
There's no distance too far for the perfect trip.
Hi, checking in for...
Or the perfect table.
Hey, where are you?
Coming!
And when you get access to Resi Priority Notify with your Amex Platinum card...
Hey, this looks amazing!
I'm so glad you made it.
And travel benefits at fine hotels and resorts booked through Amex Travel. It's worth the trip. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
All right, everybody, game off. Let's pause here to talk more about Monopoly Go. I know what you're saying. Flag on the play. You've already talked about that. But there's just so much more good stuff in this game. In Monopoly Go, you can team up with friends for timed tournaments where you work together to build up each other's boards. The more you win together, the more awesome prizes you unlock.
And there's so much more to get. You can get unique stickers. You could trade with friends to compete albums for big prizes. There's cool new playing pieces to travel the boards with. I was always a battleship guy. You know, you get those pieces, like there was the hat, there was the shoe.
Oh, same.
There was the, I was always a battleship guy or the car. You know what, too, is funny about a battleship? It's one of the only Monopoly pieces that you find that's not just a household item.
Wow, you know, I mean, even thought about that.
Yeah, most people don't have a battleship at home, but you have a car, you have a hat, you have a shoe, you have all those things. Anyway, you could also get hilarious emojis for taunting friends when you smash their buildings or heist their vaults. That's always fun. Plus, Monopoly Go feels new and exciting every day with constantly changing tournaments and challenges. A ton include their own unique mini games like digging for treasure or a robot Pachinko machine. And there's always new timed events that will help you win big, like massive multipliers for everything you win or rent frenzies.
There's always something fun to discover in Monopoly Go. So get off the bench and go download it for free right now on Google Play or the App Store. Game on.
Carolina Panthers can't use their quarterback sneak because Bryce Young is too small. He's 5'10", 204. Andy Dalton came in on those plays. So, isn't that interesting? He's too small to do what Jalen Hurts does with the Philadelphia Eagles?
Does that kind of make sense? Because they're pushing a guy and they're crunching him up, and he's slight in comparison to, like, Jalen Hurts or Fields.
Yeah, but I just figured it was everybody's move in the pile. I feel like I could get 2 yards behind the Eagles' offensive line. Andy, because you're tall and you're bigger, you get to go in for a couple of plays. First time he goes in, I think they had a false start. All right, let me bring in Andy Staples, covers college football for the website On3 Sports. We've been talking about Justin Fields. Take me back to his last year at Ohio State. Was there any real question about him being a pocket passer at the next level?
There were always those questions because the late Dwayne Haskins had some of the same issues coming out of a similar offense. And it was more about reading the defense and about what he was asked to do in that offense. And I think that's been sort of the complaint about Ohio State quarterbacks under Ryan Day. Joe Burrow was there, but then left to go to LSU, was running a different offense at LSU. I think that's going to be the question until one of them kind of breaks out and becomes a success in the NFL is, are they not asked to do the things that they need to do? And the other just obvious thing with Ohio State quarterbacks, their receivers are so much better than everyone else. There's a different kind of open at Ohio State than somewhere else. Like, I'll give you an example. Brock Purdy's receivers at Iowa State weren't nearly as open as Justin Fields' receivers. So Brock Purdy had to learn to fit it in there. Justin Fields, for the most part, had somebody wide open.
But there's been that knock on Alabama quarterbacks for years that, hey, anybody can quarterback at Alabama. You have all those great receivers. But we are getting good quarterbacks coming out of there. Well, at least we had. What happened with Alabama with this year with these quarterbacks?
Either they've missed on some, haven't developed the ones they have, or both. Because, you know, you're right. It used to be, oh, Greg McElroy, AJ McCarron, Jacob Coker. It doesn't matter. You just put them in there. They're so much more talented than everybody else. All they have to do is not make mistakes. But as other teams got as talented as Alabama, and you had to deal with the Clemsons and all that, you did have to have a more talented quarterback. And that's what Alabama did. They changed the way they recruited the quarterback position. They went more dual threat. And they had a historic, think about this, did Jalen Hurts, Tua Tagovailoa, Mac Jones, and Bryce Young in succession. There's not going to be a team in college in 20 years that has that run, that kind of run. And so I think we got a little spoiled with that. And we also got a little spoiled with them having really dynamic receivers. I mean, you think about when they had Jalen Waddle, Devontae Smith, Henry Ruggs, and Jerry Jeudy all at the same time. That's just unfair. It's what Ohio State does to everybody now. But it's also not possible to do year after year after year after year.
It was a year ago where Nick Saban kind of complained about NIL. And he was talking to his boosters. He's basically saying, look, we gotta outspend Texas A&M. A&M hasn't cashed in on this. But Alabama... like, what's going on here? Like, it's, you know, is it transfer portal, NIL? They're not taking advantage of either one of those like other schools?
No, I don't think it's that, because when they've needed to get somebody in the transfer portal like Jameson Williams a couple of years ago, they did.
Okay.
And so they've been able to spot recruit out of the portal. NIL, if they tell their donors, hey, instead of rebuilding the weight room, we'd like you to donate to NIL, they'll do it. They'll do whatever they need to do. But I do think the market in general has changed. And, you know, Andy Schwartz was an economist who worked with the plaintiffs in O'Bannon versus the NCAA and wrote this back then and said, hey, if all this stuff were to come to be, you'll see the talent spread out more. And I think you're seeing that. I mean, you in the class of 2024, Dan, here's a good example. The number one defensive lineman in the country is going to Missouri. He's from Missouri. Missouri has a state law that allows you to start cashing in on NIL deals September of your senior year of high school. So I mean, this sort of thing is changing the dynamics. The transfer portal is also changing it, because remember, if you want to play in the NFL, Matt Castle aside, you got to play in college. So you're not going to sit the bench at Alabama or Ohio State or Clemson or wherever for 3 years waiting when you can go somewhere and star right away. And, oh, by the way, they'll give you an NIL deal.
But this isn't a case of Alabama slipping as much as others are moving up the ladder?
Where Alabama's different, I think, one, they can't select as well as they could have. Like, it used to be they could get anybody they wanted. The moment Kirby Smart went to Georgia, that changed. The other thing that's happening with Alabama is the bench of assistant coaches is not that deep. Remember, Nick Saban was losing assistants left and right, but always seemed to have somebody ready who was either in that Nick Saban witness relocation program that Mike Loxley always joked about, or had worked there before, gone somewhere else, and was coming back. Well, this time they didn't have that. When Bill O'Brien went to the Patriots, they didn't have an OC just ready to pull up, which is exactly what Georgia did this year when they lost Todd Monken to the Ravens. So they had to go do a national search. They talked to Brian Grubb at Washington. They talked to other people, and they end up hiring Tommy Rees for Notre Dame. But Tommy Rees had never worked with Nick Saban before. We don't know how well they worked together. In the past, Nick Saban has usually picked somebody he has already worked with and knows exactly what he's going to get out of.
Is there any fallout if Clemson and or Alabama don't make the playoffs this year?
I don't know if there's any fallout in terms of Clemson is probably going to have to rethink the way they do some things, because while Alabama has adjusted to the changes in college sports, Clemson hasn't. Dabo Sweeney has not wanted to use the transfer portal. I think the first time he used it was last year to get Hunter Johnson, who was a quarterback at Northwestern, who had been a quarterback at Clemson. So he's basically just bringing him back. They have not filled holes nearly as well because they have not wanted to use the transfer portal because Dabo doesn't believe in that. Well, he's probably going to have to start believing in it.
Yeah. We're talking to Andy Staples. He covers college football at On3 Sports. Colorado these next two weekends. How important are these two games for just this season? Well, maybe for the entire program moving forward.
Well, I think they're very important, but it's more about how you show up. It's not necessarily if you win. If you win either one of these games, it is awesome. They will be the biggest story in sports if they can beat Oregon this weekend. But if they can compete with Oregon this weekend, that should tell you they're going to be a monster in the next year or so, because when you revamp a roster the way they did, wholesale changes, you can get skill players out of the portal, but it's very hard to find big guys in the portal. And Oregon has really good players up front, both lines of scrimmage. If they can hang with what they have, they'll be able to get better big guys this next year. And all of a sudden, they'll be competitive with anybody. Now, I went into the season before I saw them play thinking this is a game where they're just going to get their doors blown off. And it may happen because they don't have Travis Hunter, but I've been really impressed with the way they've played schematically. Sean Lewis, the offensive coordinator, was a good head coach at Kent State. He's done a good job taking advantage of what they do have and hiding what they don't. If they can keep doing that, I think they could be really good in the coming years.
And then they've got USC at home after that. But I'm wondering, once again, USC lacking defense. They certainly have offense. But are they a Final Four team with just an offensive-minded team?
I think they're better defensively this year. They went out and got some guys out of the portal. Remember I said there's not a lot of good big guys available in the portal, but USC tends to draw the ones that are. And they got a guy named Bear Alexander from Georgia to play defensive tackle. They got Anthony Lucas from Texas A&M who plays on the D-line as well. Body types that USC just didn't have before. And most teams in the Pac-12 that aren't Oregon or Utah don't have. So I do think they're going to be considerably better defensively. We'll see when they play Colorado, when they play Notre Dame, but I suspect they're better than they were last year.
Speaking of Notre Dame, they got Ohio State. How impactful is this game?
It's huge. I mean, I was talking to Mike Golic Jr., who played center for the Irish when they played for a national title in 2012. He said this feels bigger than any of those games. I was talking to some people at Notre Dame. They said this feels like the biggest game since USC came in 2005 on that campus. And so this is huge because they got Sam Hartman now at quarterback, which feels like the piece they've been missing, the thing that allows that offense to be more explosive. They just haven't had that in the last few years. So If you can beat an Ohio State, you can absolutely beat anybody in the country. And I do think with this schedule, if they split Ohio State and USC and are competitive in the one they lose, they could still make the 14 playoff at 11-1.
Have a great weekend, Andy. Always great to catch up with you. Thank you.
Thanks, Dan.
Andy Staples, covering college football for On3 Sports. We'll take a break. We'll check in with the mess that is the Chicago Bears after this. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 until noon Eastern, 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. And you can find us on the iHeartRadio app at FSR or stream us live on the Peacock app.
Hey, what's up, everybody? It's me, three-time Pro Bowler LeVar Arrington, and I couldn't be more excited to announce a podcast called Up On Game. What is Up On Game, you ask? Along with my fellow Pro Bowler, TJ Hushmanzada, and Super Bowl champion, yep, that's right, Plexico Burris. You can only name a show with that type of talent on it, Up On Game. We're going to be sharing our real-life experiences loaded with teachable moments. Listen to Up On Game with me, LeVar Arrington, TJ Hushmanzada, and Plexico Burris on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts from.
There's this episode brought to you by 20th Century Studios' Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Director Wes Ball breathes new life into the epic franchise set several generations after the last installment, in which apes are the dominant species. As a ruthless king attempts to build his empire at the expense of the remaining human race, a young ape will fight for the future of apes and humans alike and embark on a journey that will redefine the planet. Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Enter the kingdom in IMAX this Friday and in theaters everywhere. Get tickets now.
There's no distance too far for the perfect trip.
Hi, checking in for...
Or the perfect table.
Hey, where are you?
Coming!
And when you get access to Resi Priority Notify with your Amex Platinum card...
Hey, this looks amazing!
I'm so glad you made it.
And travel benefits at fine hotels and resorts booked through Amex Travel. It's worth the trip. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
All right, everybody, game off. Let's pause here to talk more about Monopoly Go. I know what you're saying. Flag on the play. You've already talked about that. But there's just so much more good stuff in this game. In Monopoly Go, you can team up with friends for timed tournaments where you work together to build up each other's boards. The more you win together, the more awesome prizes you unlock.
And there's so much more to get. You can get unique stickers. You could trade with friends to compete albums for big prizes. There's cool new playing pieces to travel the boards with. I was always a battleship guy. You know, you get those pieces, like there was the hat, there was the shoe.
Oh, same.
There was the, I was always a battleship guy or the car. You know what, too, is funny about a battleship? It's one of the only Monopoly pieces that you find that's not just a household item.
Wow, you know, I mean, even thought about that.
Yeah, most people don't have a battleship at home, but you have a car, you have a hat, you have a shoe, you have all those things. Anyway, you could also get hilarious emojis for taunting friends when you smash their buildings or heist their vaults. That's always fun. Plus, Monopoly Go feels new and exciting every day with constantly changing tournaments and challenges. A ton include their own unique mini games like digging for treasure or a robot Pachinko machine. And there's always new timed events that will help you win big, like massive multipliers for everything you win or rent frenzies.
There's always something fun to discover in Monopoly Go. So get off the bench and go download it for free right now on Google Play or the App Store. Game on.
So many interesting baseball stats this year. Kyle Schwarber is one of my favorite players. Not because I think he's good. He's just fascinating. He went 0-for-3 with a strikeout in the Phillies' win over the Braves. He's the first player to strike out 200 times in back-to-back seasons since Chris Davis did it in 2015 and 2016. Congratulations!
Stat of the day. Stat of the day. Here comes the stat of the day. Yeah, stat of the day. Stat of the day. Here comes the stat of the day.
Stat of the day brought to you by Panini America, the official trading cards of the Dan Patrick Show. Josh Schrock covers the Bears for NBC Sports Chicago. He joins us now. Boy, you had a day yesterday there, Josh. When did you know that it was a mess when you showed up at the facility?
I'd say about 90 seconds after Justin Fields took the podium, and it was clear that he had a lot of things on his mind and a lot of things to say. And Things just snowballed from there. They just kept going until about 7 o'clock at night. So it was a bizarre and very weird day at Halas Hall, and one that will probably define this team.
But I wonder about the tweet that was sent out, and it stopped with just he blames coaching. And then we didn't add anything else to that tweet. So we had to wait to really find out the context of that. If you flip it around where he takes blame and then he mentions the coach, like it just felt like if he handled it differently, then this isn't a big deal. Do you agree?
Yeah, I agree. I think Justin is a very smart kid, and I think he clearly went to the podium yesterday with an idea of what was being said about him and how things are going, and he wanted to get out in front of some of the issues, and he starts with it could be coaching and then proceeds to say it's also on me. But look, he was very critical of the staff, and I think he meant what he said. He was direct, confident. He didn't torch them, and I think he went to the practice field and then got off and saw everyone just running with the one thing and was like, wow, okay, I need to backtrack because it's a quarterback's unwritten law that I don't just come out and blast everyone. So he wants to make it clear that he does blame himself, but everything he said, he meant.
Okay, but if you look at this situation, how do you troubleshoot this if you're the Bears front office, coaching staff, and Justin Fields?
Well, I think they could have helped themselves a lot if they had understood their personnel better. Like, a job of a good coordinator and a good coach is to know your player's strengths and to game plan around what they do best, not game plan around what you want to do. And anyone who's watched the Bears through the first two games can tell you that's not the offense they should be running. That's not the offense that made Justin special last year. So that's where they could have started, and that was about 2 months ago. But as of now, they need to scrap everything. They need to scrap the Aaron Rodgers-esque offense that Luke Getsy wants to run, and they need to listen to what Justin's saying and just do what he does best. Four quarterback design runs in two games is not nearly enough. They've really cobwebbed the vertical passing game, except the two drives they scored against Tampa. They need to do what this offense was built to do. They told us it's built around mobility. It's built around vertical passing. And then they just completely disregarded all of that for the first 2 weeks and have made Justin think too much and play pretty poorly. And he owns some of that blame, but they need to scrap everything. They need to scrap the game plan, and they need to do what makes him comfortable, because that's the only way they're going to win.
But the big question is still going to be, can he beat you from the pocket?
Right.
When it's all said and done, he was a curiosity. It was fun to watch. They don't win, but are you okay with that? If you're a Chicago Bear fan, would you rather just be entertaining and maybe you're not going to win games? Or can you try to – are they trying to make him something that he's not, therefore you're going to lose games either way?
Justin says they're not. I think what he was getting at yesterday was what he's good at and what they want him to do not align at the moment. And they need to find a way to mesh the two. He's not trying to say, I don't want to play from the pocket. But what he's saying is, I don't want to just stand there like they're telling me to do and go 1, 2, 3, pause, wait, make sure it's good, and then get out. I need to still play free. And right now he's thinking way too much because he wants to do everything that they tell him to do to a T. And that's not going to work at this level, Dan. Like, it's clear against the Bucs, he was freezing. His brain was locking up, and it led to a lot of mistakes. He missed open receivers. He admitted the strip sack was what happened, right? He's like, I would have been out of there last year, but I'm just trying to do what they're telling me. So they need to figure out a way to get him to play from the pocket, but also utilize that athleticism. And they need to roll the pocket. They need to not make it so, hey, everything is just straight drop back or behind a bad offensive line and try to make it work.
Yeah, because there were a couple of reads against Tampa Bay where you're going, I got two guys open.
Yeah.
And he was freezing.
Yep.
But he might just be one. He might be like Cam Newton, that you just say, look, do it how you need to do it for as long as you can do it. And then we saw what happened. Cam fell off a cliff. He couldn't play anymore. He got him to a Super Bowl.
Yep.
But I, you know. And I was just talking to Andy Staples, who covers college football, and he said, you know, there were questions about Justin Fields when he was in college at Ohio State that you didn't have to do much because your receivers are so good. Ryan Day, offensive-minded head coach, and, you know, you're not reading as much. Now in the NFL, you do have to go through your progressions, or at least most of the elite quarterbacks, and then you have Kansas City coming up this weekend. It just feels like this is – Justin Fields is going to put on the cape and go out there and try to be Justin Fields of last year.
Yeah, and honestly, at this point, Dan, the offensive line is so banged up and they're making so many mental mistakes offensively. The receivers are running the wrong routes. They're standing next to each other. The only way this is going to even have a chance to be successful on Sunday against a team that's much more talented than they are, both sides of the ball, is for Justin to just be Superman like he was last year and try to will them to 30 points. I think your point about, you know, Cam Newton, yeah, I mean, that might end up being what Justin is. I think he's been put in a horrible spot to start his career. He's had no continuity. He's had, you know, Matt Nagy, now Luke Getsy, and no one's engineered anything around him. You think about what Greg Roman did with Lamar Jackson, right? Where it was like, okay, let's just package what you do well. We'll make you successful. You win an MVP. And now Todd Monken's building on that. They've gotten him weapons and he was able to progress as a quarterback. Justin's not had any of that. And I mean, honestly, things are spiraling right now for the Bears. And like I said, it kind of reeks of Nagy Trubisky 2.0, right? Where Mitch got benched. And then he came out and started talking freely about the scheme issues and how he was uncomfortable. And to Justin's credit, he knows this is his career and he has to get out in front of this and say, hey, yeah, I'm playing bad. Part of it's on me, but part of it's because I'm just doing what I'm told and it needs to change.
And he had all of this unfolding. And then your defensive coordinator resigns yesterday. Do we have any more information on why he decided to step away for his health and to be with his family?
The situation remains incredibly murky. It was even murkier yesterday when the Bears released a one-line statement that said he resigned. Dan, I mean, you know, even when people fire executives or coaches, it's always, we thank you for your service. We appreciate the time. You'll be a Bear for life. It was none of that. It was, hey, he's gone. So something else is going on, I think, other than health, because if it was just health and family, they would have wished him well and said, you know, he can come back anytime if he wants. And that's clearly not the case.
They've already taken him off the website.
Yep.
I mean, they're scrubbing any remnants of him.
Distancing themselves.
And just the rumors that are out there.
Yeah. I mean, that's the only reason we know he resigned is because of those rumors and social media, because otherwise the Bears were really content on keeping it. Hey, we don't have an update. He's not here for now.
Great appearance, Josh. Thanks for joining us. Have fun today.
I always do, Dan. Yeah, thanks for having me.
Thank you. Josh Schrock. Bears insider, NBC Sports Chicago. You know, you get a team, all you want is a team that has some kind of storyline there. Give me some drama. Hey, we're really good or we're really bad. That's all you want if you're going to be a beat writer, beat reporter, local radio. Just give me something. Well, the Bears gave you that. Congratulations. Jim in Ohio. Hi, Jim. What's on your mind today?
Hey, Dan, first of all, I want to thank you for coming to Cincinnati for the book signing.
Yep.
I think everybody enjoyed your wit, humor, and stories. I want to clear up something, then I have a quick question for you. I'm the one that drew that caricature.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. And I did not intentionally make you look like Anderson Cooper and Harry Carey. I didn't have a lot of time to get that ready. I usually take a couple weeks to think about it, sketch it out. So I would like to redeem myself and send another one. This time I want to include the Dan Etson.
All right, sure. Yeah, I got lipstick on. I look like Harry Carey and Anderson Cooper if they had a child. And I have bright red lipstick on.
Well, I have to redeem myself because that was not my intention whatsoever. And I do like you. I've been following sports for 50 years. My four favorite broadcasters, you're one of them. So I do admire your job and what you have brought to the sport.
Well, thank you, Jim. I appreciate that. I think I might be fourth.
Top four, though.
Yeah.
You made it.
Yeah.
That's Mount Rushmore.
Yeah.
Okay. Top four.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe.
Who do you think the other three are?
No, I don't know.
Don't you want to know?
It doesn't matter. No.
Yes, you do.
Jim, is Jim still there?
Yeah.
Okay, real quickly, who are your other three, Jim?
Marty Brenneman.
Okay, Reds announcer.
Harry Carey. Pat Hughes. And you.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, thank you. Thank you, Jim.
That's good company right there.
So Pat Hughes does the Cubs, and then Marty Brenneman, Hall of Famer, and then Harry Carey.
That is good company.
Yeah.
Good for you, Dan.
Thank you. Thank you. If Anderson Cooper and Harry Carey had a child,
bam.
That's me.
And wait, you guys are going to get a portrait done of you. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 until noon Eastern, 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. And you can find us on the iHeartRadio app at FSR or stream us live on the Peacock app. It'll be the Steelers and the Raiders Sunday Night Football. Festivities start on NBC and Peacock at 7 Eastern. More phone calls coming up. Update the poll results. He's our good buddy, Chris Long, inside the NFL analyst. He'll be joining us coming up in a little bit with the host, Ryan Clark, and Channing Crowder, Jay Cutler, Chad Ochocinco, and Chris Long. So he'll be joining us here coming up as well. Did we get a further update on the hit by Minka with Chubb?
I haven't seen anything about any fines or anything like that from the league. And no more details from the Browns.
Because I wondered, now you're getting people, you know, it's hard to look at the hit because ESPN didn't replay it. You're seeing some on social media, but I don't know if the NFL has looked at this. And the question is, you know, was it a legitimate hit? Minka Fitzpatrick said that, I would say, one, they've never tackled Nick Chubb before, and they're telling me to go high, too. What I seen was it opened up its goal line. I didn't see anybody on him. I made the decision as soon as I seen the hole open up and him in the hole to go low. You can tell me how to tackle him low, but it's a fast game. It's a game where you make decisions in milliseconds. Can't really control what happened after you choose to make your decision. I already chose to go low. Somebody got on his back when I was going low. And what happened, happened. There's nothing I would do differently. Again, I said earlier, it's unfortunate. Nick Chubb's a great player. He makes the game a lot better when he's playing. Just hope for a speedy recovery. There's been this push for if a player is already engaged, that you can't go low when somebody has him up top. It just happens so quickly. I know that we want to look at these isolated incidents and say, oh, okay, then he shouldn't have gone low. He should have seen that somebody had him up top. It happens so quickly. And you're in the middle of all of this. I just can't imagine what it's like to be a defensive player anymore. That no matter what you do, it feels like you're not doing it the right way. You're not doing enough. Like it's up to you to safeguard all the offensive players. These guys are trying to make a living. They're trying to take you down. And Minka Fitzpatrick, who got hurt, they took him to the hospital on that tackle. Can he see that Nick Chubb is engaged up top and therefore he shouldn't have gone low? If he wasn't engaged, then he could have gone low? Yeah, Paulie.
I've watched a few replays and a few pictures that cut short when Nick Chubb, where his knee collapses. Minka's going pretty low. He's being wrapped up. Chubb is being wrapped up by 55, and Minka is almost on the ground himself. And he goes shoulder to knee. Yeah. Look, I don't think he had the intentions of breaking his knee, but he is very low.
Well, if you've tried to tackle Derrick Henry, are you going to go up top? No. Like Jerome Bettis, you're going low. And that's the only way you get these guys down. And these guys outweigh these defensive backs by 50 pounds, some of these running backs. And they're running at you. It's tough to be a defensive player in the NFL. By the way, Deion Sanders did an interview with Taylor Rooks. I'll have some of those comments coming up. Is Deion's on fire. He is live at the improv, man. He cannot do any wrong. Our good buddy, Chris Long, inside the NFL analyst and former NFL defensive end, won a Super Bowl. You won a couple of Super Bowls, didn't you? Did you win the Patriots and Eagles?
Got a little lucky at the end there, Dan.
Okay.
Yeah,
where are the rings?
Good to see you. The rings are in a safe. You know, the rings are like they're only for team events. You know, like NFL honors, that sort of thing. I'm the type that would lose my Super Bowl ring, so they stay in the safe.
This is what I proposed years ago that we should have a ring, and then inside the ring, like you can wear it almost like a class ring from high school.
Yeah.
So it's medium size. It's not gaudy, but it still represents something you did with your team. Then you can bring out the show ring if you want to, but this gives you the, hey, there's my high school graduation ring.
I kind of like that. I'd like to have four rings, you know, feel like Robert Horry or one of these guys that stacked a bunch of them up. But yeah, yeah, I got lucky there at the end, Dan. It was a good little run.
Good to talk to you again. What's it like being on a bad team?
Wow. The hard hitting questions right off the bat. It's so funny, Dan. I was watching. It's not funny, not for the people of Chicago, but I was watching the Bears and, you know, that game against Tampa. I feel like I've been in that game 100 times in 8 years in St. Louis. I mean, 1-15, 2-14, you know, the height of our run there was 7-9. And that Chicago team feels a lot like teams that I was on, you know, when you gather a little bit of hope. You go through camp, and camp is tough because you got these old vets, and especially when I got in the league, it was the old CBA. So you had a bunch of old guys who had seen it all. You know, they were a little bit hardened, and they were going to be honest with you about how the team looked. Today, I think in camp, it's all feel good. Everybody's got hope. It's a bunch of young players. You don't know in camp if you've only been in for like 4 years if your team sucks. And back in the day, I think we had a pretty good pulse on that. So it was like a mind game, you know, as the years went on of how can I trick myself into believing that we have a shot to do this? And the hardest part is it's not like the NBA. It's not like the MLB when you're going to suck. You get on the team plane, you go to dinner, you have fun on the road. I'm not saying these guys are having fun when they're winning 20 games in the NBA, but it's a lot easier than an NFL player who's going to put his body on the line every Sunday and knowing that, like, if you turn on your TV and you're an Arizona Cardinal, you're drafting Caleb Williams, according to guys like myself and everybody else. And sometimes I think we make it a little bit too simple when it comes to like punting on a season. So it can be really hard. Every Sunday, it's like taking the field and knowing we're probably going to lose, but you got to go out there and kind of, I don't know, you hope to be the guy that jumps off the tape. If anybody's watching, you know, because nobody's watching on TV, but somebody's going to be watching next week in the All 22. If anybody's watching, if anybody cares, I'm going to be the guy that jumps off the tape.
What did you see in the Minka Fitzpatrick hit on Nick Chubb?
So at first, Dan, you know, because it's all slow motion and I heard your take that, you know, they should have showed it. That stuff doesn't bother me because, you know, like, listen, it's happened to my friends. I've seen it in person. It's hard to make me squeamish, but they do show the slow motion. They don't go full speed. The angle was kind of from the right sideline. So you don't see Minka's approach at full speed. And initially, even as a defensive player who albeit saw the game from the front and never had to make those plays. Okay. I was like, hey man, people are saying Minka has a track record. He's just doing it. He's going for it. He's just going low and he's got to know that linebacker's there. But, as I slept on it and I woke up to do Inside the NFL and Ryan Clark was there and I was reading through his Twitter and he's going back and forth with Nate Burleson. I'm kind of like, do I disagree with the host here? You know, me and Ryan didn't talk about it, but I just got on All 22 and took a closer look. And I do not think it was dirty. And the thing that, because for you to prove that something's dirty, it has to be, with malicious intent to injure. You can say that it's an imperfect situation for running backs in the NFL. We talk about this all the time. I mean, it's a tough job and this is why. You can say that it's tough for defenders. You know, they've legislated where you can hit a guy, the whole thing. But I think the most compelling argument for me is I'm texting guys and calling guys that I play with on the back end who are the furthest thing from dirty players, people that I respect greatly. And they're like, listen, man, not dirty at all. It's the 4 yard line. We got to get this guy down. He's not seeing that backer who almost simultaneously jumps on Chubb's back. I saw comparisons to a defensive lineman being high load. Not true. I mean, a defensive lineman being high load in today's game is vindictive. That's the only way you high low somebody. I mean, it's so easy to hurt somebody doing that. Even back in my dad's day, he used to tell me about, hey, when the 290-pound guards were getting thrown around by He-Man out there and they were tired of Howie Long, they would high low him, and it was a dirtbag thing to do. Now, the difference is this: when a running back is churning his feet, statistically speaking, it's really hard to hit that guy at the right time and injure him, even if you were trying, because his feet are up and down. If you're anchoring in a four technique, both your feet are planted, you're stationary, and there's no expectation of that happening. Guys do this all the time. I watched the tape. 23 Kazee for the Steelers made a play at the beginning of the fourth quarter, early in the game. It happened a couple times in that game alone. So I'm just not comfortable calling a guy dirty. you know, that's a heavy accusation. I've seen dirty plays. You want to talk about dirty? Go back to the college football landscape last week. It's not worth death threats. I think that thing was ridiculous. I think I heard y'all talking about Deion. I think he's just been brilliant at the podium, the voice of reason, the adult in the room. But this was not a dirty play on Monday night, in my opinion. And it took me a second, I'll admit. And today, I think the landscape is when you get online, you get on X, you get on the X machine, you're so afraid to step out and say, hey, guys, I don't see it that way, because, you know, the compounding effect of everybody's opinion is the people who know will be afraid to be called that same thing, and it's not worth them to speak up. And I learned that in reaching out to a few DBs and a wide receiver who said the same thing.
Talking to Chris Long inside the NFL, the host is Ryan Clark. Channing Crowder's there, Jay Cutler, Ocho Cinco. Every Tuesday at 8 Eastern on the CW, and stream the episode the next day on CWTV.com and the CW app. Is there anybody that you still harbor a grudge against that you played against?
Not really. I was talking about this the other day. You know, there was a guy named Anthony Davis in San Francisco, and we outwardly didn't like each other. You know, he was younger. I got the best of him a few times, and I'm sure somewhere he's sitting there with his feet kicked up like, you bringing this up again? I'm good. You know, like, you know, it was really hard for me. Breno Giacomini, a guy who played in that Tom Cable offense in Seattle, and it was so physical, and he'd hit you late, and he'd dump you, and that group would do borderline dirty stuff. But for the most part, when I got off the field and I was done with it. It takes a lot to harbor a grudge like that. My grudge is more against teams that we just couldn't seem to beat, you know, and I try not to let it affect my analysis. And I think I've done a pretty good job of it, because I picked the San Francisco 49ers to be in the Super Bowl. I've been complimentary of the Seahawks. The thing that I've had the hardest time with, Dan, and maybe you could help me out, is fan bases are extremely sensitive about their teams and they think it's personal. And, you know, like I'll be breaking down the Falcons and I'll be like, hey, they're a good team. Desmond Ridder has to catch up. And I got 100 Falcons fans in my mentions like, you know, you're a hater. You hate us. I don't hate you.
Why,
I'm not a hateful
guy. Why do you
guy.
Read them? Why do you read them?
Because we're a growing podcast. So at this point, you know, you're Dan Patrick. You know, like, you don't need to read your comments. You don't need feedback. Your show's been going for a long time.
Don't let them change your opinion. And if
they don't, they don't. Desmond Ridder needs to catch up. I'm saying it again on the Dan Patrick show. But I like to read, because, you know, sometimes the comments are actually constructive. They're like, we like this. We need timestamps on the YouTube video. Maybe more of this. Why didn't you talk about the Cardinals today? Well,
why don't you have somebody who goes through, have your
mom
or your wife go through and no, you don't want your wife.
No.
But have somebody who goes through it and then filters and just says, hey, here's the thing. This is what the Danettes do.
Congratulations, Matt, in the back of the room, one of our producers here. I don't have a cool name
promoted
like the Danettes.
Yeah.
But Matt, you get to go through all the YouTube mentions and aggregate the opinions.
Yeah. There you go. Matt,
congratulations.
Matt just got promoted. What's your
Dan Patrick?
What's your story that you're going to tell your kids about Tom Brady?
A few. I think, you know, first and foremost, I got a lot of respect for the guy. You know, like, I'm not just saying that. I don't have to
say
that.
Well, don't give us any cheesy stuff.
I've been critical of him when he's, you know, ninja kicked defensive backs after interceptions. Like, you know, I don't know if it's a New England quarterback thing with Mac Jones and him where they're a little bit. But I think Tom Brady was one of the nicest, most down-to-earth teammates I had. And I truly think he's a good person. He has a good heart. And when I got into New England, you have to, somebody's a leader on a team like that, it can be really good or it can be really disruptive, because your good players, they set the tone. And if it's not a great guy, you know, that can kind of poison a locker room, even if you don't realize it. When I walked into the building, you know, I'd played 9 years on a lot of bad teams, had a good run, but I didn't expect that Tom Brady knew much about me. And, you know, of course, I walk in, he's passing me in the hallway. We're on the way out to walk through, and I say, hey, Tom, nice to meet you. I'm Chris. You know, appreciate you. And he goes, and he's actually there. I was coming up to introduce myself, Chris. I just wanted to welcome you here. You know, I've enjoyed watching you play. We're happy to have you. And I saw him repeat that interaction with four or five guys that were new, kind of veteran additions in that locker room. I saw him treat the janitor the same way that he'd treat, you know, Bill. I saw him treat the guy in the parking lot the same way that he would treat Josh McDaniels. I really do believe you can judge somebody on how they treat the person in the building who you need the least from. And I saw him on many occasions do that. And I also saw him turn into hell on wheels on the sideline, which you need to be sometimes. And I think some people see him slamming a tablet and they want to point the finger at him and say, you know, bad teammate or whatever. That's leadership sometimes. And you can say it's not the packaging you like, or he looks like a baby sometimes, but sometimes you got to be that guy. And I thought he possessed the ability to do both, be that pick you up guy, have fun, but also the guy could jump down your throat and strike the fear of God and the wide receivers.
But then you have Belichick. Doesn't say too much.
Nah.
Chris, that's good to see you. Good game.
I love Bill. I love Bill, Dad. I can't help but love Bill.
How do you love Bill? What's there to love?
A lot. The guy's got hobbies that are like quirky. He likes like boats and lacrosse, and you know, like he likes his dog. It's just kind of like disarming that the dude who, you know, you thought for a long time was maybe Darth Vader has this kind of soft side. And if you get Bill to laugh, I mean, you just, I used to go through the hall and just try to make Bill laugh, you know, not in a kissing up way, but I just wanted to see him smile. Cause you know, when he just breaks character for a second, that upper lip moves just a little bit and you're like, hey, we did it today.
We
used to love, like we used to love that. But I love Bill because he was honest, and so many coaches in the NFL will not shoot you straight. Even if they're going to fire you in 2 weeks, they'll be afraid to tell you that to your face in their office. I had two coaches like that. I remember when I was unhealthy at the end of my career in St. Louis, Greg Williams pulled me in his office and I was like, hey, I want to be out there on third down. And I'm thinking in my head like a competitor. And he's like, you're not good enough right now. You're not healthy enough. I love you, but that's a disservice to the other guys. And it took that. It took hearing the honesty, and the same thing with Bill, you know, being honest with me at different turns in the road. And another thing I love about Bill is this, Dan, it's a little bit off the beaten path for a fan, but when we travel as NFL players, whether you're a 10-year vet, a 14-year vet, a rookie, chances are these coaches are going to put you back in coach, ironically. And the coaches, the little 5'10 guys, well, I don't want to say 5'10, maybe the 5'7 guys, some of the quality control guys, their little feet are kicking, you know, above the ground. They don't need all that leg room. And they're up there watching all 22, having a soda. And we're in the back and we just played 60 plays and I'm cramped between Jordan Mailata and Lane Johnson. Okay. But when we were in New England, Bill put all the guys that he could up in the front. Bill sat and coached. So, you know, you think about, that's just a little anecdote about the guy. I loved his honesty. I loved the fact that he respected his players. And I've texted him since, and you'd think I was just there for a year, played a role. Left in free agency, maybe he'd be happy about that, or maybe he'd hold a grudge. But he's actually, you know, we've talked from time to time. And one time I complimented him on that very travel deal, and I got a text out of the blue from Bill that was like, I appreciate you commending our travel, Chris. And it just made my day. I'm a big Bill fan. And yeah, you can say the personnel decisions haven't been great, but I really think there's a good football team in there, and I would almost go as far as saying that's the best 0-2 team in the league, if that's a distinction you want to own.
Good luck with Inside the NFL. My best to the family as always, and thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Dan. Great to see you.
That's Chris Long, Inside the NFL analyst, and you can watch every Tuesday at 8 Eastern on the CW. Stream the episode the next day on CWTV.com and the CW app. We've known him a long time when he was at Virginia. When he first got out, I remember talking cars. Didn't he have like a Cadillac Eldorado?
Yeah, or some big Impala or something.
Yeah, I remember that. We've known him a long, long time.
Yeah.
I just want to say thank you for complimenting me, coach, sitting in coach. He's sucking up to Belichick and Brady.
I think you kind of got to, though.
Do you?
I think if you get to New England and Tom is right there and Bill's walking down the hallway, you're...
Okay.
I could see the like appeal of trying to get Bill Belichick to break character.
Oh, definitely.
Using the term break character was perfect.
Absolutely.
I totally get that. If you could get that dude to laugh, that's a good day.
But doesn't he strike you as he's going to laugh and it's going to be an awkward laugh? Like he would be like,
Uh-huh. Or like laugh at the wrong time. You're like, no, that wasn't the funny part yet.
I'm going to crack muscles in his face somehow.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
All right, everybody, game off. Let's pause here to talk more about Monopoly Go. I know what you're saying. Flag on the play. You've already talked about that. But there's just so much more good stuff in this game. In Monopoly Go, you can team up with friends for timed tournaments where you work together to build up each other's boards. The more you win together, the more awesome prizes you unlock.
And there's so much more to get. You can get unique stickers. You could trade with friends to compete albums for big prizes. There's cool new playing pieces to travel the boards with. I was always a battleship guy. You know, you get those pieces. Like, there was the hat. There was the shoe.
Oh, same.
There was the... I was always a battleship guy, or the car. You know what, too, is funny about a battleship? It's one of the only Monopoly pieces that you find that's not just a household item.
Wow, you know what I mean? Even thought about that.
Yeah, most people don't have a battleship at home, but you have a car, you have a hat, you have a shoe, you have all those things. Anyway, you could also get hilarious emojis for taunting friends when you smash their buildings or heist their vaults. That's always fun. Plus, Monopoly Go feels new and exciting every day with constantly changing tournaments and challenges. A ton include their own unique mini games like digging for treasure or a robot Pachinko machine. And there's always new timed events that will help you win big, like massive multipliers for everything you win or rent frenzies.
There's always something fun to discover in Monopoly Go. So get off the bench and go download it for free right now on Google Play or the App Store. Game on.
Hey guys, you know what this playground could use? A wine country, huh?
A redwood forest would be cool.
Ski slopes!
Wait! Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.